Today, the SME Responsible Lending Misdirection. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. Given the responsible lending changes stalled in Parliament last week, between now and May, we're going to hear about two issues. The first is the rise in risky home loans. And second, how, according to the government, responsible lending rules will magically boost finance to the SME sector. The first is a happening thing, even while the existing responsible lending rules are in place, but the SME lending issue will become a political plaything because SME finance is a dog whistle, which the government hopes will convince the crossbench to roll over, when in fact the reverse is the case, and as I will show, if you remove the responsible lending provisions, in fact, SME lending will continue to step backwards. So today we're going to explore this in more detail. The controversial state reforms that could have seen Australia's responsible lending laws overhauled has been postponed until the next round of sittings in May. In fact, the vote will probably be in June sometime. It ends a week of debate on Australia's banking culture that has polarised politicians and opened a deep divide between banks and consumer groups. The reforms could fundamentally change how responsible lending obligations work in Australia, with the post-global financial crisis emphasis on lenders to vet borrowers reversed. And it also includes provisions to expend the best interest duties beyond just mortgage brokers to take in all consumer-facing brokers. The government, along with major banking institutions and industry groups, insist that the bill will help the Australian economy to recover after the COVID-19 pandemic, which is why they called it such, and will help more credit to be introduced into the market. But opponents, including opposition parties and consumer groups, say that the reforms would directly contravene the first recommendation of the Hayne Royal Commission into the banking sector and would place less financial literate people into bad loans. It began a week ago when the government-dominated Senate Economics Legislation Committee recommended that the bill be passed despite dissenting opinions from the Labour and Green members on the committee. And last Monday saw the bill debated in both chambers of Parliament, with the House of Representatives' discussion featuring speaker after speaker from the opposition benches slamming the potential reforms. Throughout the week, industry groups have spoken out on the issue. Commercial broker organisations in particular have been very vocal, as the best interest duty extensions would become a minefield for those who regularly deal with small businesses. And should BID be extended, many small businesses where personal property such as housing is often used as collateral for commercial transactions could be a huge grey area for commercial brokers. A decision was supposed to have been reached this week, but will not now be discussed until May at the earliest, when the Senate returns. The government managed to win House divisions on the issue with strict party line votes, but will need crossbench support if the bill is to pass in the Senate. Now, according to Australian Broker, the number of risky home loans rose by 26% in the last full quarter. And that, of course, is using data from APRA. In statistics released late last week, it was revealed that more than $21.5 billion of loans was written, and the regulator classed those as risky in the period ending December 2020. APRA ranks loans with a debt-to-income ratio of more than 6 times as risky, as well as loans that come with a low deposit, 95% loan-to-value ratio, for example, or interest-only loans for owner-occupiers. The news comes amid record house prices and record home loan growth, but also a week in which the Senate was discussing reforms proposed by the government that would change responsible lending obligations for banks in Australia. The idea was concocted in the depths of COVID at the end of last year, when it looked like the economy might tank said Sally Tyndall, Director of Research and Public Relations. The idea was to free up the flow of credit to kickstart the economy. I don't know that the idea of getting consumers to take on more debt and potentially riskier debt to get the economy out of a hole is the best idea, especially if people took out more debt than they could afford to repay. Now we are out of the recession, the economy is getting back on track, and the flow of credit, particularly in relation to housing, has hit a record high. The value of home lending has never been higher in the ABS records. Why would anyone think we need to free up the flow of credit? She asks. The laws, which are due to be voted on in May, will see significant changes to the roles of regulators like APRA, who release the risky lending figures. The concern is that you will have the twin peak model, ASIC, with a big stick, looking at individual banks to make sure that everyone is doing the right thing. APRA, with a holistic model and less of a stick. To take ASIC out of that equation could mean that there's fewer penalties for banks that don't lend responsibly, and it shifts the onus from the bank to the borrower. I don't know that people are fully equipped to make those decisions alone. It really comes down to the banks and how the RLO changes will materialise in their processing systems. The banks have come out and said that they aren't going to start writing blank cheques. It's not in their interest to lend to people who can't repay. So I don't think it's going to fall to pieces the instant this legislation comes through, she said. But where you might see people taking out risky debt might be things like the property market. APRA have a measure of people taking out debt where the value is six times their income. You might see people take on more debt than they can manage at this point in time because interest rates are so low. But as soon as rates rise, they'll feel the squeeze. And then there are loans with very small deposits. At the moment, the government are encouraging people to take out home loans with as little as a 5% deposit in a market where property prices are forecast to rise. Now, that's not as big a problem as it would be if prices were forecast to fall. However, we can't tell exactly what is going to happen, and that might be seen as risky lending as well. The other concern is that by largely removing ASIC, you're taking away the ability to fine and penalise banks. There'll be less repercussions if banks don't do the right thing. The way that the proposed system is designed to work is that while ASIC are taken out of the equation, people can still complain to the Australian Financial Complaints Authority, who can issue fines, but only with very limited scope. There's a concern that if something goes bad, consumers won't be able to be compensated as much as they are in the current system. And yet, according to the advisor, Treasurer Josh Frydenberg has announced that the government will extend the SME responsible lending exemption given the delays to the bill repealing responsible lending laws. In March 2020, Federal Treasurer Josh Frydenberg announced a six-month exemption for small business credit from responsible lending obligations to help speed up the time taken for SMEs to access credit. Speaking at the time, Mr. Frydenberg explained that while responsible lending obligations do not apply to loans used predominantly for business purposes, lenders must undertake due diligence to confirm that the money borrowed meets this test. However, in order to allow lenders to move quickly to small businesses during the COVID-19 pandemic, the government moved to provide an exemption of this rule for a period of 6 months. The exemption was set to expire on the 2nd of April 21. However, given the delay to the government's bill to repeal responsible lending laws in full, this has now been extended further. Speaking on Friday the 19th of March, the Treasurer said as part of the government's commitments to these reforms, the small business exemption will be extended until the government secures passage of its credit reforms through the Senate. The extension will continue to provide the certainty and confidence necessary to allow small businesses to access credit in a timely and efficient manner. The National Consumer Credit Protection Amendment Supporting Economic Recovery Bill 2020, which focuses on amending the credit laws so they'll remove responsible lending obligations and extend the best interest duties to more creditors and providers, among other changes, will now not be debated in the Senate until the next period of sittings. The delay comes despite the final report of the Senate Economics Legislation Committee inquiry recommending that the bill be passed, albeit with dissenting reports from Labour and Green members, and the bill passed in the House of Representatives on Monday the 15th of March. However, after being introduced into the Senate on Tuesday the 16th of March, the Senate adjourned the debate for the second reading until the first day in the next period of sittings. That's set for the 11th of May 2020. according to the state journals, although it could be later. Given this, we can expect that the extension to the SME responsible lending exemptions will be in place until at least the 11th of May, or until the bill receives royal assent. The exemption will only apply to lenders who provide credit to existing small business customers, provided there is an existing borrowing relationship and some proportion of that credit is used for business purposes. It'll apply to new credit, credit limit increases, and credit variations and restructures. However, the Treasurer emphasised that credit providers regulated by the Australian Prudential Regulatory Authority will remain subject to APRA's prudential standards while the exemption applies, and providers who subscribe to an industry code will remain obliged to abide by that code. Speaking of the bill generally, Frydenberg noted that the bill passed through the House of Representatives on Monday the 15th of March, adding that he believed the credit reforms contained in the bill are, quote, important for continuing to enable the Australian economy to recover from the COVID-19 pandemic. The reforms will reduce the costs and time it takes to access credit for Australian consumers and businesses, removing unnecessary barriers to accessing credit, which in turn will facilitate more economic activity, Frydenberg concluded. Well, it is certainly true that through the pandemic, small businesses have generally been hit harder than larger businesses. Many businesses surveyed by the ABS reported that revenue in June of last year was much lower than the year prior, but small businesses were around twice as likely as large businesses to have reported declines of 50% or more. But Chris Kemp, the RBA Deputy Governor, speaking recently, said, when it comes to finance, the past year has actually been less volatile for small businesses in general. Aggregate lending to SMEs has been little changed since the onset of the pandemic. Indeed, SME lending had been around its current level for the past few years. Aside from lending to the agricultural sector, which increased throughout much of 2020, lending has been flat for SMEs across the board. But lending to SMEs in those industries most adversely affected by the pandemic has been low for some time. In contrast to SMEs, lending to large businesses increased sharply in March and April last year as those businesses drew upon sizable lines of credit. Large businesses have since repaid these funds, though outstanding lending remains a bit above pre-pandemic levels. Kent said that many of the challenges small businesses face when accessing finance have been around for many years. These challenges are not unique to SMEs in Australia. Indeed, back in 2015, the OECD said that SMEs are typically at a disadvantage with respect to large firms when accessing finance, owing to opacity, under-collateralization, high transaction costs and the lack of financial skills. Financing needs and constraints vary widely across the business population. Firm size, age and phase of development have an important bearing on the type of financing needed and access to diverse financial sources. SMEs generally face higher interest rates, tighter borrowing terms, and are more likely to be credit rationed than large firms. Capital gaps also exist for innovative and growth-oriented firms, as well as for medium-sized enterprises that seek to invest and expand. Informal SMEs in particular may be unserved or underserved by financial institutions, and furthermore, financial sources tend to dry up more rapidly for small firms than for large companies during economic downturns. The shortage of finance experienced by SMEs makes the economic and social impacts of economic crises more severe and long-lasting. While many SMEs face problems obtaining banks' finances, access to non-bank financing is often even more constrained, they said. Now, Kent explained that small businesses, particularly less established ones, tend to be riskier than large established firms with a track record of profitability. As a result, lenders reject a greater proportion of loan applications from smaller businesses. They also charge more to take on the additional risk associated with the loans they provide. And the terms of the loans may also be more restrictive. For example, loans to small businesses may often be small relative to the size of the business or require collateral or personal guarantees. Indeed, around 95% of loans to SMEs are secured, compared with around 70% for large business loans. And about half of all small business loans are secured by residential property. Many small business owners may not be well placed to provide sufficient home equity to secure a suitable loan. Small businesses generally have few viable alternatives for external finance outside of that of traditional intermediated finance. Unlike large businesses, it is too costly for them to raise funds directly from capital markets. And Australian small businesses have made increasing use of non-traditional sources of finance in recent years, such as balance sheet lending and marketplace lending. However, the available data suggests that non-traditional sources of finance account for less than 2% of overall SME lending in 2018, although, sidebar, it's growing now. And he went on to show that despite a range of policy measures, lending to the SME sector has hardly changed, though in the second half of 2020, commitments for new SME loans did increase a little to around the level seen in the lead up to the pandemic. Much of the increase owes to businesses borrowing funds for the purpose of property and plant and equipment. The latter is consistent with the expansion of the Australian government's instant asset tax write-off scheme. Now, here's a few points I want to make. First, it's clear that despite the fact that for the last few months, responsible lending was completely removed, it had no impact on SME lending. So I can't see any reason why you would want to change the status quo. The second is, in a desperate effort to get their bank supporting consumer negative responsible lending bill passed in May, the government will be pushing the benefits of the changes to the SME sector, despite the fact that the SME lending problem is a long-term structural issue around the world, and business lending is not subject to the responsible lending rules in the first place. I expect they will try to twist the arm of backbenchers and crossbenchers in the Senate by amping up the SME support, and never mind the impact on other consumers. So they'll use it as a backdoor way to try and get their whole bill through. The real reason why banks prefer to lend to consumers, particularly mortgages, is the capital weighting that the BIS supervise. You can pretty much lend four times the loans for mortgage relative to SME loans based on the amount of capital that you need to lend. In fact, if you were to make it easier to lend to consumers, loans to businesses would be even harder to get unless those risk weights are changed. So if you want to encourage banks to lend to the crucial SME sector harder, rather than reducing lending standards, the simple solution is to change the risk weights. I suggest reversing them, making it four times more effective to lend to SME than for mortgages. Now that would really change the game. And in addition, many small businesses have to use residential property as collateral for business transactions. And there's a grey area between business financing and personal financing, as many SME owners use their houses as collateral in their commercial loans. An obvious potential for confusion when SME finances and personal finances intertwine as closely as often they do for small business owners. But I would also argue that this is just the reason why consumer protections should be preserved and extended and not reduced or removed. The APRA system risk rules may protect the financial system, though that's debatable, but not individual borrowers. We need to maintain and enhance responsible lending provisions, not gut them. And remember this, the Australian Securities Investments Commission has blasted big financial institutions for a backlog of $3.6 billion in unpaid remediation, saying many had failed to invest in the systems and processes required to distribute required remediation payments as a result of the Royal Commission. ASIC Deputy Chair Karen Chester told the Regulator's Oversight Committee that as at last month, ASIC was monitoring 88 remediations, and so far $1.37 billion had been returned to consumers, according to The Australian. But we are waiting for a further $3.6 billion to go out the door, Chester told the committee. We are very frustrated. Some committee members suggested that ASIC was to blame for the delays because banks felt they had to carefully scrutinise the fine details of each case and spend enormous sums on lawyers and consultants, The Australian reported. But while Chester acknowledged that many institutions took that approach, she pushed back on assigning ASIC the blame. She said, "I reject completely that this is because of the laws and regulations. It is their commercial choice," she said. "The draft regulatory guidance we've put out is designed to give them confidence that they can make assumptions and use formulas so they don't need to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on lawyers and consultants to get a precise answer. But in doing that, they have to err on the side of generosity. So it's their commercial choice not to do that. It's not ASIC's. ASIC's concern about the slow pace of remediation by banks led to the publication of a consultation in December. In the paper, ASIC said that it had overseen hundreds of remediations on the financial services sector, including for the scandals revealed by the Hayne Royal Commission. The paper said that some licensees saw remediations as a distraction from their core business, while others failed to prioritise remediations by taking on overly legalistic approaches that neglected consumer interest. This has led to consumers potentially suffering twice, the paper said, first because of the initial actions of the licensee that caused them the loss, and then secondly through a remediation process that failed to prioritise their interests. So, again, if you want more evidence of the bias towards big banks and away from consumers, here it is again. So, to summarise, it's absolutely essential that the Senate members who have opposed responsible lending changes understand that the government will try and push them into a corner using SME lending as a misdirection. But the truth is that the last thing we need is less protection for consumers at the moment, with lending and high-risk lending at that growing very fast, and the structural issues relating to the SME sector not related at all to the responsible lending laws. And indeed, SME lending is excluded from responsible lending. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.